Hello and welcome to Secondhand Film Critics, your favorite source for mildly pretentious, semi-uneducated, and highly unqualified opinions on movies. I am Noah, and as always, I am joined by my co-host,
Kayla.
We're back for Lost Weekend, episode 2. Last episode was very fun. We did some on-the-floor segments. We got to hear from the directors of both Eternity of You and Me, as well as The Stylist. And this episode is going to be pretty similar. We have some more thoughts from the floor to share, as well as another film showcase and an interview with the filmmakers. So it's going to be a pretty fun time. I think the listeners are in for a treat.
I was trying to think if there was like a joke I could make.
Yeah.
But
a
my
treat or a
my
trick.
Brain,
It is October.
Yeah.
So they're in for a trick or a treat.
Yeah. Mm-hmm, good one. Mm-hmm, that was good.
Mm-hmm.
I unfortunately am not. Improv is not my specialty. I have to plan my jokes out ahead of time.
Yeah. Yeah, unlike who we're going to be talking to in the interview today,
yes.
Who they are much funnier than we are.
They make us sound funny.
You know, I feel
that's
like
that's what I love about
yeah.
When you talk to funny people, like who are just genuinely the funniest people, basically, they make you feel funny too, because
yeah.
They just elevate the funniness that is going
yes.
on, and so suddenly you become funny, and then it's like, man, I wish I was this funny all the time.
All the time. Yeah, it's like, I can riff with other people, or like, I'll say something, and then I'll turn it into a better joke, but then it still makes me feel like I kind of came up with something, you know?
Yeah.
It just is like, it's really a great motivator for me.
Yeah.
That's why we do the Hallmark episodes with Peter, because he's a lot funnier than
yeah,
us. Like,
he makes
us
feel funny.
Our podcast is, a lot of it is just inviting people on who are better at things than we are.
Yes.
And then it just kind of really
we
makes
just
us
ride
feel,
their,
look really cool.
Ride their ladder to the top. We'll sit on their coattails
bop,
and
we
say,
bop, bop, bop,
bop,
bop,
bop
to the
to
top.
The top. Slip and slide and ride that rhythm. Wow. Great.
We
so
should probably get into the segment, though.
We should get going, yeah, before we lose our weekend before we lose
oh,
our
man.
Episode.
Bring it back.
Ooh boy.
That joke.
So let's go on the floor at Lost Weekend and hear what some of the attendees had to say about the movies they saw.
Sal saying thanks to Andy and everyone else who put together Lost Weekend. It's always a great time. I think so far my favorite movie has been Beyond the Infinite 2 minutes. It was very clever. Funny. It really was amazing. And if you like sci-fi and you like sort of time travel kind of movies, it's really well done. Very well done. And the filming is just amazing. It's shot in one take, from my understanding. Certainly looks like it, but they seamlessly put in themselves again on video. I would definitely recommend it, because after a certain point, you laugh at the humor of the time travel, and at the same time, the journey that everyone is going through. You lose sight of where you are in this storyline, and it just sort of all becomes the present, even though everything is happening both simultaneously in the past and in the future. Last night, I stayed for the midnight showing of Resurrection.
Oh, yes.
And it was fascinating. I couldn't quite tell in the end what was going on, but that was probably the point. In the end, it left open questions, and I think that was probably part of why it was just strange. Saw Baby Assassins.
Okay, what did you think of that one?
I liked it. It had pacing issues for me, but I think that was because the trailer did kind of present it as a full-on action movie, and that's not really what it was. It had great action, and the last scene was impressive, and the hand-to-hand combat sequence was one of the most amazing I've seen on film. That was very fast-paced and very well done. But in the end, it's about a movie with about two teenage women trying to make it. So that was also that was
interesting. Yeah, it was an interesting blend that they were trying to hit with
it felt like I thought it would work better as like a sitcom, like of them living together and like going and fighting crime, different person each episode, because that was my favorite part, was the two of them,
right,
and their dynamic, as well as the action, which was awesome.
Yeah, I think once I realized that it wasn't going to be a full-on action film, I was focusing on the two ladies. And that was good. But you're right. I think as a sitcom, that would be very, very, that'd be very good.
Under the Open Sky was my favorite so far of all the films I've seen. It was really good. And I think for me, what gets me up there and liking movies is like, oh, how close am I coming to crying? And I like teared up and shed a tear for this one. I think obviously it's very powerful just within any society to talk about incarceration and reentry. I'd personally volunteered in college some on like reentry preparation stuff in correctional facilities. So that was something that hit home a little bit, and to see how much of a struggle that can be and how much small moments mean a lot when they're built up over time, both negative and positive, for someone working on that alone and to navigate a system like a welfare system. And then Baby Assassins, coming right off of that, it was like satirical Yakuza stuff, which was not the film I wanted to see right after that. Most of the time, I'm used to seeing like certain blood and effects stuff in like YouTube videos like it was in the movie. And I was like, oh, we're doing this in this movie. But it was fun. And then I saw Fire of Love, which was, I saw a review on Letterboxd that was exactly how I felt. And it was like, you know, the visuals and the story is really cool. I just wish the narrator would kind of shut up and stop talking about these like existential questions. And that's how I felt. But volcanoes are so cool. And the footage they had was so awesome. And they had a great eye for how to capture humans within the environment that they were, you know, in. And I take a lot of photos. And so I really appreciated that. But then it was like, the little animated bits in between, and the narrator was really present in like directing the film, and they did a good job having the recordings from the people themselves just kind of over footage and let that talk, but I'd wish they'd maybe done that a little bit more.
Thank you to all those lovely people who shared their thoughts. We love to hear from the people. We're a very I don't know what the word is. We're just gonna move on to our local business spot for this episode. So again, we're trying to highlight some of the local businesses that help make this festival a possibility, and we love supporting local businesses. So we're going to hear right now from the comic book shop Four Color Fantasies about some stuff about their business and just why they partnered with Lost Weekend.
My name is Eric C. Jones, and I'm the manager at Four Color Fantasies in Winchester, Virginia.
Cool. And if you want to talk about kind of why you partner with Lost Weekend, what
sure.
you guys sell.
We're the city's only comic shop at the moment. We've been in business since 1987. Same owner the entire time. I've been shopping there since I was 11, and I'm 38. The store's all about community. We have a pretty awesome back issue selection, which a lot of shops don't have anymore. We can get just about anything. But the community is a big part of why we do Lost Weekend. I think it's important to partner with other businesses in the community, and especially what Andy does here at Lost Weekend, always donating to something good, something cool, and we like being a part of it.
So. And do you want to talk about any of the movies that you've seen this weekend, if you've seen any?
I loved, and in turn to view me, loved that. I thought that was amazing. I loved Alien on Stage. I thought that was really, really, really good. RRR. Blew my socks off. I live out in the woods, so I can't stream anything, so I haven't seen it on Netflix. So I've been wanting to see it, so being able to see it on the big screen was tremendous. Under the Open Sky, I loved. I love Japanese movies anyway. The time travel one, again, I'm terrible with names. The one with the TV that sees 2 minutes in the future.
Beyond the Infinite 2 minutes?
Yes.
I think that's what
Thank
it
you.
Is.
Thank you. You're a
I
lifesaver.
I didn't see that one.
It was
but...
fantastic. That was great. What did I see today? Pez Outlaw was fantastic. I didn't see any that I didn't like, so.
That's awesome. That's always a win.
Yeah, yeah. I feel I can't sit for too long. Like, if I watch 2 hours of TV at home, I'm like, I'm wasting my day. But here, I was okay with it. So.
Yeah, cool.
What about our shop? I think we're great. I think we have a great community. There are people that have been shopping there since 1987.
That's awesome.
We do an awesome charity every year called FCF Covers Literacy, where we get artists from around the world to do blank sketch covers, and all the proceeds go to the literacy volunteers of the Winchester area. We've raised $20,000 in 4 years. We've had Eisner winners, Harvey winners. We had Thomas Lennon from Reno 911 did a cover once. I think we've had somebody from every country except for Asia and Africa, so I just need those two. But we're already getting ready for next year's. It runs every April. That's my favorite thing that we do. So.
Awesome. And if you just want to plug, like, where people could find you,
sure.
Like maybe on social media, if you're on Facebook. Absolutely. Or whatever.
Facebook's our main one, facebook.com/FCF Comics. I think we're just Four Color Fantasies, all one, lowercase on Instagram, and FCF Comics on Twitter. And we're the bright blue house on Weems Lane. You cannot miss us.
Yeah, so thanks to Four Color Fantasies for chatting with us on the floor last weekend. Make sure if you're local to Winchester, you check them out. They're very cool. And Noah, do you read comic books?
I would lie and say I do, but I don't. I don't think I've ever really read like a real comic book like ever. I've read like graphic novels.
I've read graphic novels.
Like, I've just never gotten into the comic book thing. Maybe it would be something I like. I just think I missed the boat. I missed the boat on it.
Four Color Fantasies is awesome because I feel like, if I can share my own personal opinions about this business here.
This is not reflect the views of your employer.
I have not read comic books before because I feel like it's a very intimidating
genre. It's very elitist.
Of stuff to get. Well,
yes.
But yes, that is true. I feel like there is a lot of gatekeeping in comic books, but I just feel like it's very overwhelming. Like, you don't really know where to start. So if I was like, hey, I want to read, you know, some Batman and Robin comic books with Robin in them, I would not have any idea where to start.
So
I've always
I'd probably
been
start
like
in the middle of a series or something.
And then someone, you know, on Twitter would tell me that I'm wrong and dumb.
This is the worst one. I can't believe you even started with this run.
But what I was going to say is, after talking to Eric from Four Color Fantasies, I felt like I could walk into their store and they would actually genuinely, like, help me. Like, I felt like it broke down all the, like, things I had in my head
about it
when I talked to him. And I was like, huh, maybe I will finally start reading some Dick Grayson comic books that I have wanted to read before. Let's go to a quick ad break. And when we come back, we'll be talking about New York's worst landlords. We're back.
And this is our film showcase segment of the pod, where we talk a little bit about the movie that you're about to hear from the creators of. That sentence didn't really work very well. But yeah, we'll just share a little about the movie because I think sometimes that's helpful going into an interview just to get a sense of what the movie is about and what they're creating. And then when you hear from them, hopefully that will even deepen your appreciation and make you want to seek it out, because this is a very accessible film, because it's actually currently a three-part series that is on YouTube forever.
Wow.
Watch it. Wow.
YouTube.
Available on YouTube for free. And they are, I believe, making a fourth. So it's like,
yes.
It is something that is very accessible. You could watch it right now in the comfort of your living
room.
Well,
finish listening to this episode first.
Well, yeah.
And then watch it.
Definitely.
At least come back once you watch it. Yeah.
Just make sure we don't leave us here. Don't leave us hanging.
It's a documentary type, but leans kind of YouTube style documentary, if you know what I mean, about New York's worst landlords. No.
I was just putting in a voice of like something the listener might say.
Shane Dawson? no listener is thinking that. I hope not. If you're a Shane Dawson fan, we don't want you.
I'm just saying, like, that's, I think, of what you think about with YouTube documentary.
Yes, it is.
You know.
Yeah, I would have said, like, who would I have said? Like, Casey Neistat or something. Like, I know
Casey
his
Neistat
is more vlog.
Vibes,
but
like,
he,
2018 Casey Neistat vibes.
Yeah, he's because he did yeah. content similar to this, like, with the quick editing duo.
Yeah.
No, these guys are way better than Casey Neistat. So, Jeff, if you're listening,
yeah,
you're
don't support.
Casey,
they're
we're
not,
not. We're
yeah,
not.
Yeah, they're not Blue Lives Matter.
Yeah,
so.
We're.
Casey Neistat is a wild guy.
Yes,
wild.
Not a fan of him either. So, anyway, sorry. Back to the main point. The...
Not a nice stand.
This movie is about the list that was released in the New York, nope, New York Times? No. There's a list.
Oh my gosh. This is so bad.
Of New York's, that's all that you need to know. There's a list of New York's worst landlords, and their goal was to expose, talk to the landlords, and so it's kind of their journey of, like, trying to figure out if they can interview a landlord, but also talking to the tenants, learning about tenants' rights, and, like, the housing crisis in New York, and how basically these awful, terrible people who, if you're a landlord, you're a terrible person. Not all terrible people are landlords, but all landlords are terrible people. And
the Venn diagram is like that, yeah.
How they have, like, tormented these people by not being there for them, not, like, actually allowing the tenants to have their own rights. And so it just is this big thing. And there's, when you get into it, it leads into stuff with evictions court and then kind of like,
yeah, it snowballs
the landlords
pretty heavily.
Trying to, yeah, and it's, I mean, it's, if you don't know a lot about this, this is definitely a great starting point, because it's not just New York. While this does focus on these specific buildings in New York that are owned by a few of the top worst landlords, like, this is probably happening in your local community as well. I'm sure you could talk to anyone who has had a landlord and rented from someone, and it's just everybody has had some sort of terrible experience with a landlord, or are currently struggling with housing crises, especially now, like, after COVID and inflation and all that. It just is, it's hard out there, and landlords suck and make it so much worse than it should be for people just trying to live in a safe and comfortable home. If you're like me, I love my home. I am the Bilbo Baggins of my life.
The Bilbo Baggins of your life, yeah.
Yeah,
you're the main.
I was reading
The Hobbit
recently, and literally, like, every time Bilbo said anything, I was like, wow, that's so me. Because he would be like,
wow, so real.
He's
Bilbo
on this adventure, and it would be like, Bilbo wished that he was at home in front of his warm fire eating a loaf of bread. And I'm like, me.
That sounds great.
That is, I also wish that all the time.
Yeah, always. Every day. Yeah, this is a really interesting documentary. Like you said, I think it is a good entry point into the subject. And it's cool because, like you said, they definitely start with that intention of, like, contacting all the landlords. But with documentaries like this, I think it's cool to see how it progresses and turns into something maybe that they weren't expecting it to turn into when it first started. Because it's like a very, it goes through like at least a year, maybe 2 years. So it's a longer period of time, and you kind of see their journey as they are trying to get these interviews and learning more about the landlords and the tenants. The landlords, the tenants, the people that live there, like, just it is an interesting evolution throughout the three parts. And it's a very different type of documentary than the one we talked about last episode, An Eternity of You and Me. So I think it's a good example of, like, how many, just a lot of the documentaries at Lost Weekend, like, how many different things you can do with a documentary. Like, it doesn't just have to be a Ken Burns style documentary or just, like, talking heads. Like, there's so many different things you can do with a documentary and ways to tell the story.
And this one is also interesting since it is formatted for YouTube. So when you watch it, if you're someone who, like me, spends a lot of time on YouTube, it like does Bilbo have Baggins a very it's a very specific like editing style, and you know, Jeff does the style very well for this specific YouTube style, right, which is also interesting. It was very interesting watching it on a big screen because for me, when I watch these types of videos, I usually put them on when I am doing something else. So like if I'm doing chores like laundry and stuff, I'll usually put on a YouTube video like this. Because I'm like, oh yeah, I don't want to watch a movie right now, but I want to watch something and I don't want to listen to a podcast. So I'll put on a YouTube video that is kind of this documentary style. So it was very interesting actually sitting in a theater and watching it on the big screen, like in that setting, because it just was so weird and like, is this, am I really watching a YouTube video? Like it just was so, I don't know if you had that experience.
It was very interesting. I think it was because it's like something that was created for a singular viewing or a small viewing. And it's funny to like see how the jokes land, YouTube style jokes land, and like hearing crowds laugh at them, because it's just such a different feeling than like a studio comedy. Shows a lot how comedy works and how it's just like you get used to seeing a certain type of comedy and content in one format. And so it's just weird to see it in the other. Yeah, you said, Jeff, it's, we haven't even said though. Yeah, this is Jeff Seal and then also Nick and Chris Libby. So they, three of them, were at the festival. We're about to have an interview with them, and they were the makers of this documentary. So it's really just them three. Jeff is in front of the camera, directing the camera, and then the Libby brothers are behind the camera doing sound, photography, things like that. And then they're all kind of behind the scenes working, directing how all of it's going to go. Like I said, it's really interesting to see how it evolves, because it's like, again, you start with one idea and then situations happen, things don't go the way you think they do, and then it, by the end of that show, the third part, it's like a different documentary than I think they probably would have expected to have made. So yeah, let's just go right into the interview then. This is a really fun interview. Hope you guys enjoy it. This is an interview with Jeff Seal and the Libby brothers about New York's worst landlords.
All right, I'm Chris, and this is my voice. And I shot the New York's Worst Landlords.
My name is Nick Libby. I help produce and I covered sound on New York's Worst Landlords.
I'm Jeff, and I directed New York's Worst Landlords. And this is my voice. Whoop, whoop, that's Andy. Probably does that in every one. Has a whoop, whoop, whoop.
Maybe. Yeah, yes. I think it's mandatory, actually. We need them in the interviews to make them legitimate. Great. So our first question, always whenever we have a guest on, is what is the first movie that you guys saw in a theater? Because we think that that's always a fun icebreaker, kind of thinking back.
I was trying to remember that the other day when I was listening to, I forget what it was, but it was maybe when I was listening to the Blank Check podcast. What is the first movie? Oh my God. I mean, I couldn't remember what the absolute first one is. I mean, I remember, seeing a revival of Meet Me in St. Louis. I remember seeing Star Trek, I think it was 4. It's the one where Spock swims in the aquarium with a whale. I remember like going to Westwood. I grew up in Los Angeles, and like there was a line to see it. We like waited in the line to see it. But I don't think either of those two are my first. I'm going to keep thinking about it. Do you guys know your first?
I don't know. My brain immediately went to Jack Frost, that movie.
With Michael Keaton?
I think Michael Keaton. But yeah. I actually think that was the first one I like bought.
Okay.
But I can't, I don't remember which one.
I remember that movie.
Otherwise, like, I want to, I don't know, like Home Alone, but I also don't, I'm just, I think my brain is just grabbing movies.
From your childhood.
I just remember going to Titanic with my family and my sisters telling me to cover my eyes during the nude scene.
That's funny.
This is an awkward memory.
Yeah, the first theater
that
memory.
Your question.
Yeah. No. Great.
Oh, totally.
I just, this is how old I am. I saw Ghostbusters in the theater, but I was so young that I got really scared and I had to leave the movie theater. So that's, I definitely saw before those other two films, but I don't know if it was the first.
I fell asleep in my first one.
Which, what was your first one?
Over the, Home on the Range?
Home on the Range.
Home on the Range. The animated Disney movie with talking cows.
And yours was first Finding Nemo or no?
No, well, Finding Nemo is one of the first ones I, like, remember seeing in the theater.
Yeah.
But the first one I saw was Snow Dogs.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
Cuba, yeah.
Cuba.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I really got to remember my absolute first film. I'm going to maybe...
That's not... Yeah, it's a great question. It's not one that, like, I feel like... Like, I remember the first CD. Like, there's the things... People,
right.
Nobody's ever asked me that one before.
Yeah.
Yeah, so in that case, then, talking about films, what was one that was, like, impactful for you and, like, pretty much inspired you to make movies or do the craft in the medium of film?
That one I could... So I think for me... The Clockwork Orange was the first film where I was like, what the heck is this? It was like, and it was the first time I was like, I thought about like, who made this? You know, like I never would necessarily see a film and be like, who directed this? I was like, what person is responsible for this film? Because it was like, it was so different than anything I'd ever seen. And then so I went and like watched all of Kubrick's other films. So obviously I didn't see that in the movie theater. I saw that on VHS. I rented it. Or my brother was watching it with his friend. And I started watching part of it, and then like I wanted to stop watching it so I could watch it from the beginning and watch the whole thing, and then I rented it. But that was the first one where I was that. Then I, after that, I was like, I want to be a director. So yeah,
I remember in eighth grade, my like English teacher screened Top Gun for us, and I remember we then like broke it down by like shot lists, and like he helped like teach us like how a story is told through like different shots and stuff. I remember being very impressed and interested in that.
I know it's my chronological turn to talk. I can't think of like, so this is the first super impactful movie.
Or just like, just movies that inspired you even maybe later in life. Like,
For some reason my brain immediately went to, and I do love this movie, although I feel like it's so cliche. Good Will Hunting was a movie that like freshman year of college I didn't have TV and I didn't have like Netflix wasn't a thing yet. So I just had, I had space on my desktop for like one movie on my, so every single night I would just watch like my favorite scenes from Good Will Hunting. And for me, it was just like, I just never got sick of like four different scenes from it. So that's been,
what were the four scenes?
Well, I would jump. I mean, it's like all the speeches, the one at the end where like Ben Affleck tells him, you know, and then like the Robin Williams one in the park. All the classic ones.
And the How's Them Apples or whatever?
Not that.
I like the bar scene. That's a good one.
Sometimes
bar scene.
If I'm really not falling asleep at night, I'd maybe go to the bar scene. But
nice.
Yeah.
So in terms of this film that you guys did with New York's Worst Landlords, what drew you to this subject as a subject? Like what made you want to make a documentary about this?
Well, so we... what did we make before together? Because it wasn't our first project. We did like...
That's a good question.
A Gothamist video?
Well, yeah, we did the Why Are You Honking?
We did Why Are You Honking. So we basically, Chris and I have, a little production team going, and we start working with Jeff on some smaller projects that are all kind of New York politics related. And we were interested in like Jeff's voice within specifically New York City and issues that were important to him. I think we just kind of, we knew that housing was, relevant and, of issue. And then honestly, I just we're just constantly, like I do today, like just scrolling through like the New York section of the New York Times, Gothamist, different blogs. And I just happened upon an article about the landlord watch list, which was just this like really weird, like it's a weird thing that the government, that the city of New York publishes like a list of like 100 worst landlords, like it's just shaming people. It feels very catty in like a kind of a beautiful bureaucratic way.
Sure.
Got some waters flying
Thank
in.
You.
What was Thank the first you. Film wow. you guys saw in a movie theater?
Yeah, movie theater. It might have been The Amazing Spider-Man 2.
Ooh. Wow.
Amazing Spider-Man 2.
That's Andrew Garfield.
Yeah.
Oh, right.
That's the first one.
Yeah.
Right there. You just say that because you read that on the wall.
No, that was.
Is that really on the wall right there?
Yeah, that's right there.
Wow, he's that's like, iconic.
The marksman.
Arch enemy.
Yeah.
Did you see it here? Reason.
No.
Okay.
I lived in New York at the time.
Oh. We're talking about New York right now.
What was your first film?
Just
pick one up here. Madea Christmas.
Walking with Dinosaurs 3D.
The first one I remember, it's probably The Amazing Spider-Man 2.
Did you guys see it together?
Not even The Amazing Spider-Man 1. It's yeah, like yeah. Amazing Spider-Man 2.
Were you out a whole generation just yeah, started on yeah. Spider-Man 2. 2?
They're like,
no. I recognize a lot of them. It's just...
You don't remember.
Yeah. I don't remember.
Fair enough.
The best remembered, so that was not fair.
Fair enough. Okay. Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Sorry to hold you up. Yeah.
Anyway, I just remember I saw that list and I thought it was like, what a weird thing that the government's doing and releasing on an annual basis. And I sent it to Jeff and Chris and being like, hey, like, what about this?
Yeah. They came to me with that idea and I was like, yes, 100%, let's do that. Because like we were saying, we had done some other videos and like, we were like starting to sort of combine like comedy with sort of like, you know, a strong political POV. And like I had done stuff like a video about like dumpster diving for food in New York and like that would highlight food waste. And then we did like honking, which was about noise pollution. And those are all things that like really care about, but also wanted to like take on sort of meatier sort of things, like bigger issues rather than just like honking's annoying. You know what I'm saying? So they came to me with that. And then I think in New York in particular and in most cities, everyone has a bad landlord story. And then like, you know, just sort of seeing gentrification and seeing, you know, the places you love leaving and like, you know, friends leaving because they just don't want to pay the rent anymore. And sort of being like, who is a city for, you know, like, is it just, it shouldn't be a luxury good to live in the city. It shouldn't just be for whoever can afford it. And like, you know, sometimes you talk to like pro real estate or I talked to a broker once when I was looking for a place and he's like, well, you know what? Not everyone can afford to live in Manhattan. It's just like, screw that. You know, like what about the people who have generations going back living in New York? You can't just tell them like, sorry, you can't live here because you don't make enough money. So that just really pisses me off. I mean, one of many things that pissed me off, but yeah. So that long story short, that was sort of the gist of it.
It was interesting seeing it because I had read a book about Salazar's campaign.
Oh, yes.
Early in the spring, it's like a graphic novel.
Yes, yes.
And it was My Summer with the Socialist.
Yes.
Senator.
I
do not remember her name.
Yes,
yeah.
It's I've met her. She got in touch after the video came out, and Sophia, she's a really awesome cartoonist, does stuff for the New Yorker and stuff.
Yeah, illustrator, and she yeah. did it. So it was from the like almost the opposite side because it didn't have much of the tenant's perspective. It
right.
was more like how their campaign like was kind of starting up, and then they leaped on to that
right.
specific topic because it seemed like more important in how they wrote the bills and stuff for.
Awesome.
Like all the stuff that went on in Albany. So it's interesting watching this like paired with that information to be like, okay, here's the other side of like the picture.
Totally. Yeah. I need to read that book. I was meaning to do that and then I didn't buy I'm going to buy the book and
Sophia
read that.
Warren.
Sophia Warren, exactly. Yeah. Yeah, that's
real
awesome.
Real-time research.
Totally. Nailed it. I think at first we were just like wanting to do Good Cause Eviction, and then we're like, well, who wrote this bill? And then that led us to Julia Salazar, and so she was really awesome and like gave us a lot of time of her time in her office to like film stuff and like do our stupid comedy bits with us, and she was like a real sport about it.
Yeah, she seems chill.
She's chill.
Awesome. And so yeah, kind of going off of that, what impact like if would you do you hope that your film has? What do you hope to like accomplish with this movie?
From my perspective, I like part of it is, for Chris and I is like we just love Jeff's voice and his like on-screen persona and humor and all of that. But then I've like come to really appreciate how important the you know issue of housing and economic inequality is. So I think it's for me it was like just getting the word out basically. That and I also think it's like a lot more of a it
it shouldn't feel so as partisan as maybe some people might think when you start talking about, you know, housing as a human right and things like that. I'm maybe a little more centrist in some ways than Jeff is, but I've come to appreciate like that this is something that we should all just like, I think if anyone just takes the time to see that these people understand the situation a little more, most people would get on board with like, these are people we need to be protecting, and this is a system that isn't working. I think that's why, you know, bringing comedy into it and all of that is like, it's just a way to get people interested, you know, so that they can, you know, take their medicine.
Right, spoonful of sugar kind of thing,
yeah.
Right?
Totally, exactly. Yeah. Well, like when we first started working on it, it was in 2018, and so we knew that the rent regulation laws in New York were going to expire. And so originally we wanted to get it out before then to sort of like let people know what was at stake and like have them, you know, call their senator or like, you know, go to a rally or whatever, you know, organize with other tenants in their building. But because of like, we did want to get sued, we had to like, you know, sort of step back and talk to lawyers and stuff. So we couldn't get it out before 2019. But like afterwards, it's just sort of like shining a light on what it is, you know, tenants are putting up with under bad landlords and how landlords are getting away with it. And, you know, let's not like, you know, let that happen again if, you know, the rent laws are in jeopardy, which might happen, but that's a whole other thing. And then I think for Good Cause Eviction, the same thing. We just like wanted people to see it and like call their reps and push for Good Cause Eviction to get passed. It didn't pass it, like for a bunch of different reasons, but it still might pass. And I think to me, it's like, it's one of those things where it's like most people that I know, and there's so many people in New York who rent. And if you just, when you tell them the bill, they're like, yeah, that'd be amazing. We should have that. And it's like, but they don't even know that there's this bill that would do that. And especially now after the pandemic, you know, people got these pandemic deals for like really cheap. And then when their lease expired, they raised their rent like a crazy amount. And everyone's really pissed off. And everyone is like, is this legal? And it's like, yeah, it is legal. But if we were to pass this bill, that it would make it illegal. So it's just about, you know, educating people about that. And then also, I didn't tell you guys about this, but I ran into someone at a housing meeting I was at. And she's organizing her building, and she said that like they watched our video and were like super inspired by it, and that like I think they like watched it a few times to like pump themselves up for their fight with like their landlord and everything. So that made me super happy to know that like it inspired people who are like organizing an entire building and trying to, you know, get concessions from their landlord.
How do you feel like YouTube affected, like, as a distribution platform? Because obviously your aim was to make it for YouTube, like, originally. Mm-hmm. Like, do you think in the future as you make more content about this or plan to, you'll continue doing that through YouTube? Or do you think you'll try to use, like, I don't know, film festivals or whatnot, like, search out other distribution?
I think for this, I was really into, like, putting it on YouTube. Out on YouTube because I just wanted as many people to see it as possible. And like film festivals like this are awesome. They're great. But it was sort of like I wanted it to be out in the world where people could see it and hopefully have an impact. So for something like this, if it's not time sensitive, maybe a film festival. But if it's time sensitive, I think you just want YouTube, put it out. Anyone in the world almost can watch it.
I mean, this kind of connects to what we were just talking about in terms of, like, the specific goal of the series. And I think the challenge with the series and, like, when you get into, you know, we were affected because we were worried about getting sued. And just, it was, like, a lot to get out. And was that we were chasing a timeline. We were chasing, like, okay, in 2018 something. I forgot all about that. There's, like, we're trying to chase before certain things were passed or voted on. And then 2019, all of a sudden, we were trying to race before they passed those laws. And we missed that because of all these, just how long it takes to get everything done the right way. And so it just kept on getting pushed back. And we kind of landed on where it is, which I have always believed in, was just like, you don't have to get so nitty gritty into the details on these types of things. You can just let it be a story about, you know, agreed effectively. Like, it's helpful to tie it to a certain vote that we're trying to get across, but it's basically like, no matter what bills we pass in New York and elsewhere, there's always going to be someone who's trying to, you know, squeeze as much money out of the little guy as possible, and the little guy's always going to have to work twice as hard to protect themselves. And I think that certainly was the story of this, and for good cause, and hopefully anything else we do in the future is, you know, celebrating the people who are not, you know, getting, that don't have the resources to get their story out there.
Yeah, it's super stressful when you, like, have you're trying to get the deadline of something like that, and there's only three of us, and so we stressed ourselves out a ton. But I still have, like, my ambitious goal is I would love to make something that actually makes a difference. You know what I'm saying? Like, that sounds so cheesy, but, like, I really wanted, like, the Good Cause Eviction Bill to go a little more viral than it was. And if, like, it would be amazing to just be, like, a lot of people saw it, called their rep, and, like, maybe made a difference in that actually getting passed, which would, I think that would be incredibly fulfilling. And that's still a goal that I would like to do, yeah.
So this is obviously set in New York City, which is correct. So many great movies from New York City that are set in New York City. So we have a series that we do called Triple Feature, where people come on the pod and they share triple features, sometimes themes, sometimes not. We were thinking we would like you guys to come up with a New York City triple feature, and each of you pick a movie that you would add to it.
Sorry, so can we just define triple feature for
me? So like three movies that if you were programming them, you would program them 1, 2, 3, right?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, we could give an example. Like, someone just did a music triple feature. So they did That Thing You Do, School of Rock,
High Fidelity.
And High Fidelity.
Yeah, that's good.
And this is like New York?
New York City.
Yeah, New York City.
So, like, whatever that feels like to you.
Right. Home Alone 2.
You're going to do.
Just kidding.
I know what Chris is going to do. But you'll wish you did this. Okay.
This is stressful.
Jeff goes first.
You go first.
No, you go first. And
you
then...
guys, Chris, I thought Chris was going to go first.
Chris,
what's that?
Nick's going to do Manhattan.
Oh, yeah.
Woody Allen.
Not anymore. So, but you were?
My bad.
What do you think Chris was going to do? I thought about doing that,
but I wouldn't have done that because, yeah.
I literally said, I was like, what are we going to do if they someone say, says Annie Hall?
Yeah. Right, yeah, yeah.
Well, I just Annie like Hall. The intro. Yeah, that, yeah we're going to cut it.
The Manhattan intro is great.
The Manhattan intro is insane.
Right.
I wish, yeah. But so,
I think we could just show any three Woody Allen films.
No.
Oh, no?
Moving forward.
Oh, okay, moving forward.
So, Chris would pick, I think you would have picked Kids.
Oh.
But Chris showed me Kids, and that one was like, I mean, you loved the movie Kids. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh.
Midnight Cowboy.
Okay.
Just no setup. That's what Chris would have done. All right, so far we've got Midnight Cowboy, Kids, and Jeff said the entire filmography of Woody Allen.
The entire filmography of Woody Allen.
Really
no.
Anything by
that
him.
That is a joke. This is really hard. What did you guys choose? You did, Midnight Cowboy, what did you say?
Kids.
Two great ones. What was I had one. Oh, well, oh, God dang it. It's just hard. Gosh.
So New York. So
I know.
Like Brooklyn,
I'm going through
Manhattan,
that.
Like a 90-minute video.
Does it have to relate to their two films?
It should. It's
okay,
just,
so
we're
you
doing
have
our
Midnight.
Best.
Okay, Kids.
Although
the,
maybe you need something more modern.
The time theme can just be New York, too. Like,
what's that? Ants. No. Woody Allen did the voice to that. God dang it. No, just... What's the one? Bugs. Bugs came out at the same time, but that did take place in New York.
Bugs Life.
Well, Ants came out at the same time as Bug,
yeah,
as a famously. Bug's Life, as
yeah,
a Bug's
yeah.
Life. I'm gonna go with a Bug's Life.
There wasn't there a character in the Flavor Flav? Her name was New York.
Yeah, oh yeah, New York. Yes. Yeah.
So maybe it's No.
I you know what it is? I'll be honest. I'm trying to come up with something obscure and cool, and all I can do is come up with really good movies that anyone would do. I'm really digging deep for some.
Hey,
you know,
can go
deep
taxi
cut.
Driver, if you want.
What's
you
that?
Know, you could go Taxi Driver.
Oh right,
you
of course.
Say,
no, I didn't even think of that one. Actually,
you said The Amazing Spider-Man 2.
Ooh.
Yeah, Amazing Spider-Man 2.
The Amazing Spider-Man 2. That's what I'm going with.
Really any
no.
Andrew Garfield
okay.
Movie.
You know what I'm gonna go with? I found it. I can't remember
the
title
show
of it.
We're 4 minutes later.
Okay, you're on research.
Okay.
It's
yes.
It's a silent film.
You found something nice.
Made in the 80s.
You're making this up.
And it's a black director, and it's based on The Kid. What's the name of it? It's this awesome film, but it's like basically a silent film because I really love like silent comedies and like Chaplin and stuff. It's called Sidewalk Stories, I think. Is that what it is? Try Sidewalk Stories.
Oh, look. No, he's not that quick.
Gives you quick Sidewalk Stories. What does it say?
Comedy, black and white, 1989. This looks right. Yeah, 1989 American low budget, nearly silent movie.
That's Sidewalk Stories.
Where is it set?
In New York.
Let's look on Wikipedia.
It's
the
set
most
in New York. Trust
thing.
Me. It's like downtown New York.
It's going to be LA.
Yeah, it doesn't tell us, so we can just take your word for it. It says reminiscent of The Kid. So
it takes place in New York.
This isn't their best triple feature.
The viewers at home can Google it. Viewers at home, if they don't believe me, Google it. Leave it in the comments. Like and subscribe. What's your guys' code? Do you have a code for like Casper mattresses or something? Do you have any discount codes? Me Undies?
Do you call them
Squarespace
viewers when it's a podcast?
My Pillow.
Listeners.
What's that?
Yeah, you don't call them viewers if it's a podcast.
Listeners of the pod?
Yeah, listeners.
Do you want to share what your triple feature was? You had a great one.
No, we were going through it and I said...
Because we were trying to pick what you think what you guys would pick.
Yeah, well, I said... It was funny because I said the very first one I said was Home Alone 2 when I was like, what do we think they're going to pick? Home Alone 2.
I said that.
Yeah,
I said that as a joke.
That was the first one that you said.
Yes.
Yeah, I said if we did kids movies, it would be Home Alone 2, Night at the Museum.
And Elf.
And Elf, but now that you said silent, I want to change it to
Little
Fugitive.
Little Fugitive.
That movie.
Yes. I changed.
Up.
Oh my God! It's
can't
a
change
that
it.
The best movie
that
ever?
Movie is
oh my
God.
Have
amazing.
Met anyone else?
Oh, I
that
love
movie?
That film.
Oh, it's so
dude,
good.
Little Fugitive. It's a tie between those two.
What about Little? What about Escape similar. From New York? That one would be good.
I've never seen Escape from New York.
Saying that, I was
Little
like,
Fugitive.
It's not Little Fugitive because that's
right.
not a black director, but it is
yes.
a woman director.
It's a woman director. She's a photographer. What's her name? Orman. It's with an O. And what's the name quickly of Sidewalk Stories? What's the director? No, the director's name. The director's name.
Okay, well, Little Fugitive is Ruth Orkin.
Ruth Orkin. See, I said Orkin.
There we go. And when going back, director is Charles Lane.
Charles Lane.
There you
yes.
go. I'm fast with this, man.
You know, there's a quote from Truffaut, and he said, without Little Fugitive, the new wave wouldn't have existed.
Kubrick said the same thing. Kubrick, because they invented basically the Steadicam.
To
make that film. That was the first film ever
yes.
done with handheld camera like that, where they moved with
okay,
it.
Okay, and that's what they
and
did
then,
in Breathless.
Yeah, and Truffaut took the...
500 Blows, yeah.
Yeah, and then Kubrick also took their camera rig for his movies.
No, really?
Yeah,
I didn't
so
know
that.
That
was what kicked off using the, like...
Fugitive.
Yeah.
Really?
Little Fugitive.
Little influential.
And
really
a lot of people don't know about it. And I'm like, you wouldn't have any fucking movie you have today
yes.
without...
Oh, we could cuss on this thing? I've been
oh, yeah.
cut. I've not been
oh,
cussing
no.
this
don't
entire
it, Jeff.
Fucking
don't...
time.
Ah,
and you've been dropping the F-bomb. I stopped myself from saying fucking shit.
Chris asked us not to swear today.
You know what? I was cringing every time I cussed in the movie today. I got to stop cussing more.
The bleeps are disappointing. I think we should do a non bleeped version. Would be
yeah.
Good.
I should do that if we ever start a Patreon.
Yes,
wait,
that's where we do.
That
the
you guys
un-bleeps.
Are saying
the
opposite. They want you to cuss
yes.
more and openly.
More
they want
great.
You are saying you want to stop
yes.
cussing altogether.
Can I say something really quick about
yeah.
cuss words?
Yeah.
Here's
on.
The thing.
Don't
here's
make him look something up.
Here's the no. Here's the thing with cuss words. Okay, so people say like, you know, if people who cuss who have a small vocabulary. First off, I think I read some study somewhere that people with that use cuss words have like a higher IQ or something. I swear to God, I read something like that.
Okay.
Google it. What does
cut
it say? No, I'm just joking.
That,
but real quick, real quick. No, they said something. They said something. Okay. What's that? Thank you. But for me, the thing about cuss words is that it's a visceral feeling. Like I feel like you can search for the right word, which is great in certain things, but it's just it's like a you know, like fuck, feel that didn't feel good, but it feels good to say like fuck shit. You feel it in your body, and so that's why I use
yeah.
it.
Well, sciencealert.com says that swearing is actually a sign of more intelligence.
Thank you.
So
thank
I don't
you.
Know if
see,
it's a .com, so if we don't. And I'm getting a Mr. Beast ad on here, so I'm not sure how
okay
how good
Jeff
this
doesn't
website
know who
is.
Mr. Beast is.
I don't know who the fuck Mr. Beast.
A YouTuber.
Oh,
a
I one time tried.
Oh, no, I know who that is.
I referenced him to you. And you
no, no, no,
know.
No. I do know who that
yeah,
is.
Yeah, yeah. Tell me about one video of Mr. Beast.
He's the one. Didn't he? Do, isn't he doing?
Don't
the,
ask. Just tell me.
He did the Squid Games thing, right?
Yes, he did.
Because you told
basically
me about that.
You could
exactly.
Say, like,
I told him about this.
Give yeah. someone $10,000. I walked into a Walmart and gave someone $10,000. That's what all his videos are.
Right.
No, but
yeah,
now they're like
a
million.
Genre. Now,
yeah, he's kept going up.
You just give away
for
him.
I would like to say
a
lot of hiding.
Can I say, this
circles? He does a lot. Of, he likes circles.
I haven't seen his videos. I don't know. I from what you said, they're like really funny and good and all that stuff.
Oh, well, I don't
but
know
there
if
is,
I said that.
There's a genre.
I don't want to go on that. Like he's very great at what he does.
Right.
Well,
okay.
I don't know if yeah. Whatever. Moving
but there,
on.
There's a whole genre.
If he's
on
listening.
Like, what's that?
If he's listening, just keep no. going.
There's a whole genre of like YouTube and like Instagram videos of like people being like, we're gonna go. Give some money to a lucky homeless person.
Oh, I hate those videos.
And it's like, first
they're
off,
so bad.
Go fuck yourself. But there's a lot of people that do that. Like, we're going to give money to someone who needs it. It's like, it's A, you're just doing it for the views. But B, it's also, it's like what I'm very interested in, what we want to like eventually, you know, make a TV show or just videos about is like, you know, like income inequality and like the sort of like systematic way that like capitalism has made wealth go up to the 1% while everyone else is sort of fighting for crumbs. You don't just solve it by like, we're gonna give a homeless guy a haircut and like let him order anything he wants on Amazon. It's like,
well, it's the same thing that like
changing the whole yeah.
It's the same thing that like American Idol does when like somebody goes on and they like have these prepared sequences and they're like, oh, and by the way,
yeah.
like
by the way,
before they sing, let me show you right. a slow motion sequence of them
yeah, yeah.
and their dog that can't read and
exactly.
like how sad it is.
It's so sad that
and
dogs can't
as opposed
read.
To like what we hope to do, which is like empowering people to tell their own stories, like
right, or well, also just
or
like
support, whatever.
And not using them for gain either, because yeah.
right.
It's also in their interest. To
well,
make
or it's like raise the minimum wage nationally. You know what I'm saying? Like, which is one small stupid little. But it's like, don't just like if you hand out $10 to some guy, it's like great. Anyways,
that can be the impact that you guys can have.
What's that?
Is to raise the minimum wage.
That'd be a good one.
Yeah.
That'd be a great. That would make a difference. So
either,
there you go.
Yeah, either that or
more swearing.
More swearing. That's what I was gonna say. Is normalize swearing.
Or get Amazing Spider-Man 2 back in the theaters.
Yeah,
please.
Thank you. This is great. This is awesome.
Awesome.
Thank you guys for being on, and everyone listening. You're all three parts are on YouTube, right?
Yeah.
Yep.
So we'll link that in the show notes, and
yeah.
everyone should go check it out. Sit down with some popcorn and
yeah.
watch all three.
Cool. Thank you guys so much for that was fun.
Wow.
Whoa.
Oh my
I just
gosh.
Got transitioned back into the future.
Wow.
Whoa.
I can't believe it.
we could just do it like that. We're back. That was I hope you guys enjoyed that interview. I think it was a really fun interview. They are really funny, like we said at the top, and I think they make us look really funny. And so that's
yeah.
always just a major win for me. And about a 24 to 36 hour confidence boost.
Yeah. I think
I
after this, we both felt pretty funny for a while. And then we realized
yeah.
when we sat down to record that we're not funny. But
we're not super funny. I would say we are
third-hand comics.
Second-hand film critics, third-hand comics, and fourth-hand food critics. That's
yeah,
what we decided.
Yeah, listen, I didn't
That's
go to clown school, and I do not have, what is it, four red noses?
Red nose
four
awards?
Red nose
yeah.
awards.
I wish I went to clown school. I
really?
Wish I was funny. Anyway, I think it would have been more fun what I'm doing now. I mean, I probably would have had a pretty fun time. But before we wrap this episode up, let's talk about a movie that we saw that is, again, another kind of documentary. This is more found footage.
So many documentaries.
So many documentaries. I can't. Why are they all coming at me so fast? This is Fire of Love, which is actually one of the bigger films that was coming out of some festivals and that I think people have been tagging it for pretty likely to be nominated for Best Documentary. I think.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, this is a movie about Katya and Maurice Kraft, who were volcanologists. What do you
yeah,
call it?
Yeah, volcanologists.
That's what it is?
Uh-huh.
Wow. First try.
You know what that sounds like?
And
it sounds like
what?
Someone that would be in like a space show. Like, if you didn't know it was a volcano.
Oh, like a vulcanologist?
Yeah. Like, I don't know, like some space thing, and it's like, I don't know, and a show about aliens, and it's like the volcanologist, and he like comes to the scene. Like, it could be like a space version of, I don't know, X-Files or something. I mean, X-Files is aliens, but an actually set in space version of X-Files. The volcanologist.
An X-Files spinoff.
Maybe I should write it. This was really big coming out of Sundance. This screened at Sundance, and it had a lot of talk, a lot of people watching it, got a lot of good ratings, and I was excited to be able to see it, because I've heard so many good things about it. Like you said, it'll probably be a front runner, I think, for best documentary for the Oscars. Like, there aren't a whole lot of other ones that have the same buzz that this one has had this year.
Right.
It is National Geographic, so it'll probably come to Disney Plus.
I think it's on coming to Disney Plus pretty soon.
Yeah, I would guess toward the end of the year.
Should be pretty available.
Because they'll want to make it kind of accessible to build more buzz before campaign season comes around. For me, this reminded me of Becoming Cousteau, which was one of my favorite documentaries of last year. Which was also National Geographic. And I think one thing that
and
was...
found footage.
And found footage. It's so interesting when they make something like this because the people they're making it about are a volcanologist or like a marine biologist like Stowe was, but they're also filmmakers. And so they have all this gorgeous footage that they shot for their own... sort of explorer movies, and it's interesting to see that a lot of their filmmaking was really just a way to expand their own craft. They were filmmaker volcanologists first and filmmakers second. Like, the filmmaking was a way for them to sort of progress their field and sort of also tell the world about these things, which is interesting. Sorry, I keep talking, but it's interesting in context with New York's Worst Landlords, because one of the things the Crafts talked about in this movie was how they wanted to use their shows and their press tours and their platforms to be able to spread the news about volcanoes and the science they...
Spread the news about Jesus.
The news about Jesus. The good news. But to better prevent disasters from volcanoes and make it accessible to a broad population of people. And New York's Worst Landlords feels similar to me in the same way.
They talked about
that
in the interview, too.
At that time, they were doing it with this, but, like, it's cool that documentary and the people behind documentaries are so passionate about their subject that I feel like it transcends, I don't know, like, other types of filmmaking, because it's all about making this information accessible to other people. Like, the story you're telling, you want people to learn something from it. It's not like you just
want them
to experience.
At least, like, informative documentaries. Yeah. Like, I think these are two ways to make informative documentaries, the New York's Worst Landlords and this, but they have the same end goal, like you said.
Which is just very interesting to me, because they're very, very different films.
No, yeah.
But I feel like
this is definitely
more
just, like, visually centered. Like, there's just a lot of visual storytelling. As well as, they have some great narration by the Crafts, I think, that they have, which I really appreciated that. I think that helps tell the story really well, their narration. We got someone talked about Fire of Love on the floor. Maybe we'll have put it in this episode, so maybe people already have heard it. Yeah, and he brought up an issue that I think we both had as well. Miranda July is, like, the main narrator of this movie. She's also a director. Me and You and Everyone We Know is, like, her main biggest film. And I think that was something that kind of took away some of my enjoyment, just because it can get pretty heady. They're obviously trying to tackle some big topics, And I think sometimes it can feel like the narration is pushing you too far.
Yeah, her in narration.
One direction. Her narration, yes, not the crafts. I liked that because that feels more authentic. But it feels like it's like they're kind of manipulating the footage into saying something that they want to say rather than just letting the footage speak for itself, which I think it does. And the narration just like takes away from the visual sometimes. Like, I just want to like appreciate what the crafts filmed, you know?
Yeah, and I also think like
sometimes too much.
You don't need to be told how to experience something. Like,
yeah,
I think I could probably infer the same things from it by watching it. And maybe like, I don't know. I think some of the narration was informative, like towards the end, obviously. Well, like, I think in the beginning and the end, because the beginning establishes it, and then in the end, obviously, the crafts die on one of their expeditions.
Spoilers.
but
spoilers.
I thought that was interesting, but I think not that they died. I thought that the narration helped.
Well,
in that instance. But I do think, like, when you have all in the middle, the crafts narrating, like, I don't need to be told these things also by Miranda July. Right. I'd rather just have it speak
Maurice
for
Kraft
itself.
Loved filming volcanoes. Like, yeah, no shit. I mean, like
it does. It does. That's doing. Well, and then it's like, she kept going on and on and on about how he wanted to drop a canoe into the lava and ride down this steel, which is so badass. But then he said it, and I was like, I would have rather just had the video of him saying it instead of you telling me and then showing him saying it. Like, I didn't need to hear it twice, and it would have been funnier if I had heard it out of his mouth first than out of hers. I don't know. That was my main, like, finicky, pick-it-apart type thing.
Right. It sometimes can just take you out of it, I think. And the visuals are so cool. And just like the idea is so cool that I would have rather just kind of been transported to their time. And that's what the Cousteau documentary did. It was felt very much just like they made a movie out of like a lot of footage that he shot. And it really, even though it was directed by someone else, like directed the project, it was almost directed by him too. Cause it was like just all of his footage and stuff. So I think
that's
just maybe even
documentary.
It even just like raises awareness to the fact that there is someone like behind the scenes kind of crafting it rather than it's just like you're found footage. Like, I think that's a little cooler sometimes, but I would still recommend it. I think it's really cool. If you can see it in a theater, I definitely would recommend it because the visuals are really cool, and the sound
is really cool,
is great, because obviously there's just so much of the sound that they wouldn't have been able to get when they're mostly just shooting on film, and they're shooting on these big volcanoes. Like, so you know that the sound isn't real, but it just works so well. And it almost like I had to remember, like, oh, wait, this is like Foley. Like, this isn't like a real, this is like they added this in, but it feels so natural and really adds to the footage. So I would recommend it. I think it'd be cool. I don't know all the other documentaries that are out, but I wouldn't mind seeing it win Best Documentary.
Yeah, I'm not sure what the other ones are right now.
Right. That is basically the end of the second Lost Weekend episode.
Wow.
Next episode, we will be showcasing the film Sophie Jones, and then afterwards talking to the director, Jesse Barr, as well as just, again, hearing some on-the-floor stuff, hearing another someone from The Girls on the Run. We talked to the owner last episode, but we're going to hear from someone who is part of the organization and takes part in things. And I think that was a cool perspective to share as well, because it's obviously very different than hearing from the owner. You can kind of hear from the people that are impacted by their program.
So yeah, you can find information on Girls on the Run in our show notes, and also where to find Four Color Fantasies in Winchester, Virginia, and how you can buy some comic books from them. And then you can also check out the New York's Worst Landlords series that we'll link to the YouTube channel in our show notes as well. So you can definitely go watch that. We will be adding it to Letterboxd, so hopefully.
Yeah, we need to. So then
I did find a poster for it.
Okay, perfect. We're halfway there, living on a prayer.
We said we would put it on Letterboxd so we can all log it. So if you watch it,
I have to remember what day we watched it so I can like put it in my diary on that day.
Yes, of course.
Finally, also big thanks to Mubi for being a big supporter and sponsor of Lost Weekend. They gave us some cool bags. We love Mubi. You can go also in the show notes if you want to try to get a subscription there. There's some cool stuff playing there. I recently actually was like looking through my watch list and I forgot what it was, but there was like a few movies. I was like, man, these are all in there. I should just watch them over there. They have some cool selections, very curated stuff.
Yeah.
As opposed to like Netflix where it's just all like spit out onto the homepage. Like, here's everything. Have fun. It's a little more of a curated selection.
Yeah, very niche.
Very like, just like.
It's very like, different. I don't know, if you're a film person. It's like a little
out of the box.
And you just really want to like feel more like a cinephile or find something cool that people will look at your letterbox and be like, man, they're a cool film person. They're a first-hand film critic. Then Mubi is for you.
Oh my goodness.
It's more like if you're interested in like more inaccessible, like independent cinema, they do a lot of like supporting indie filmmakers and films that wouldn't normally get distribution kind of get put here and art house type stuff. It's very cool and international, like you said. So check out Mubi. We are not sponsored, but Lost Weekend was.
Mubi, sponsor us.
Sponsor us as well. Spot. They sponsored Lost Weekend, but now we secondhand next film step. Needs the Mubi sponsorship.
We can't even talk anymore.
Well, it sounds so much like movie. So every time I'm like movie, I keep thinking it's either booby or movie. So it's like
one of the two. It's a mixture,
I would like
actually.
To be sponsored by boobies as well, but you know. We take what we
can
get.
Have you can't have it all. We'll take any sponsorship. Yeah, so that episode will come out next Thursday. Until then, I don't think I have anything else to say.
I don't either.
All right. Well, thank you all for listening. And until next time, I'm Noah.
And I am Kayla.
I thought you were Bilbo Baggins.
I am Bilbo Baggins.
And we're
your second-hand
film
critic.